Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening to the program. Do appreciate it very much. FYI, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, he signed legislation yesterday requiring Florida students to learn about the victims of communism in high school. I think this is wonderful. Communism is disgusting, to say the least. Beginning in the 2023-2024 academic year, high school students enrolled in U.S. government courses will get at least a 45-minute instruction each November 7th describing how victims suffered under these regimes through poverty, starvation, migration, systemic lethal violence, and suppression of speech. Governor DeSantis signed the law at the Freedom Tower in Miami, where 650,000 Cubans were processed after fleeing their homeland upon Fidel Castro's seizure of power in 1959. Big-time communist. I think this tower is a reminder, DeSantis said, that freedom is not free, that you have to fight for your rights, and that there are a lot of people out there who would love nothing more than to put you under some form of oppression. He says the bill is intended to combat tremendous ignorance among young people about the history of the ideology and its impact on various parts of the world. The new law will also allocate $25 million to renovate that Freedom Tower, and it's in honor of those Cubans who resisted Castro and his communist machinations. So that's happening. That's a good thing. And I've got a few other tidbits I'd like to share with you. How about this one? We heard about some Catholic churches being vandalized in the wake of that leaked document, the leaked opinion, a draft opinion anyway, from Justice Alito, that indicates that the court has ruled. It hasn't been, I guess, officially released yet, but it will overturn Roe versus Wade in the decision that the court reached on the Dobbs case. And so other parishes have been attacked by left-wing fascists. And there's an article here from the Catholic World Report. Parish Church in Northern Colorado was tagged with pro-abortion graffiti. In fact, there's not only this article, but there are several other articles that detail a variety of different attacks against Catholic churches around the country in the last couple of days. So if you're interested in kind of keeping up with what those things are, we'll have those posted for you. But as for this particular one, it talks about St. John the 23rd Parish in Fort Collins, about an hour north of Denver. It was the latest target in Colorado following similar graffiti discovered at parishes such as one in Boulder several days earlier. Images shared with the Catholic World Report show red spray-painted inscriptions of "My Body, My Choice" and a symbol that appears to be an A, signifying anarchy. Some of the glass in the church was broken. So thankfully, even though that's a terrible thing that they did that, thankfully it's at a low level that doesn't involve violence yet, anyway. 888-914-9149. How about Saul now in Chicago? Good morning, Saul.
Hi. I have a question that I've been having for a long time. Is how does the church administrate, all the assets that it has, you know, not only money, but also time, energy, you know, labor force.
Okay. Well, if you start at the top, so to speak, the Holy See has a vast array of financial holdings. So bank accounts, properties, other things that the church, land, I suppose, things that the church at that level is the custodian of and owns. And so there should be a money management system in place that would be far beyond anything I could tell you about. I mean, I think it would strive to follow best practices that other large companies, although the church is not a company, but if we considered it in that way, where you would have financial auditors, and you would have those who are tasked with dispersing funds. Money would be moved from one account to another. Checks written, I suppose. I mean, all the ways in which any large organization would do business, that the church would do those things as well. But at a more local level, the church at the diocesan level, and then again as well at the parish level, has its own set of controls and its own set of best practices as to how, let's say in you're in Chicago, so how the Archdiocese of Chicago might buy land to build a new church, for example, or maybe establish a new school. In some dioceses, they're closing schools and they're closing churches, and others, they're building them. So regardless, you would have the bishop of the diocese in charge, ultimately, of the local church's finances. And I'm pretty sure, although I don't know this to be certain, I'm pretty sure that every diocese has to render a financial accounting of its books to the Holy See. So at the Vatican, there'd be some oversight there. But these are some somewhat arcane things that I don't have the specific answers to. But I think I could simply say, Saul, that it would be done in the manner that any large organization would tend to its books and buy and sell, etc. I hope that's helpful. Let's go to John now in California. Good morning, John.
Hi, Patrick. I listen every day.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I was in the seminary in the late 70s, and my brother, we all were born and raised Catholic, and the lady that he was getting married to had been Catholic, and but they were attending the Assembly of God Church, and she was divorced, and he got married to her in the Assembly of God, and I attended, and I kind of knew better, but I, you know, didn't. Mm-hmm.
So are you struggling with pangs of conscience? You feel like you did something sinful?
Well, I'm more concerned about him, but and saying something to him. I think I've said something in the past, and I don't think I would get too far because of her.
So are you concerned that maybe you're sinning because you're not admonishing him more, or that you didn't admonish him enough?
Yeah, it's kind of twofold, Patrick. His life as a Christian has been better than mine. Even though I was in the seminary, I kind of went off the tracks, you know, and our Lord said, you know, take the plank out of your own eye before you take the splinter out of your brother's eye.
I see what
you mean. But I'm concerned for him, you know, also because he's probably my closest friend, you know, as a brother and a friend. And
so in other words, John, if I'm reading it right, you're conflicted because you know that he needs to get back on track and the situation he's in is dangerous, spiritually speaking. But at the same time, because he knows where you've been, I mean, he still loves you as your brother, but he might react like, well, who are you to tell me what I should do, spiritually speaking, when look at you, look at what you've been through. Do you think that's the reaction you might get?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe you could do it indirectly. Maybe you could send him, I mean, is there anyone else in the family that he wouldn't be offended if he or she were to give him a book? Like the book I would suggest is called Annulments in the Catholic Church, Straight Answers to Tough Questions. It's by a canon lawyer named Ed Peters. And he gets into all the specifics that would apply to your brother and many other things too. So if there were somebody in the family who could give him that book and he wouldn't be offended, then problem solved. At least you've given him something substantial that he can sink his teeth into if he's willing. You could also say to him, you know, brother of mine, I love you. I want your happiness. And yeah, I've been a lost sheep. I've strayed away and I did some things I shouldn't have done. And I'm glad that you still love me. I'm glad you've forgiven me. I'm back on track now, thank God. But even I, a sinner, Even I, who have been around the block a couple of times, even I can be used by God to share something with you, and I'd like to do that. I'd like to share this book with you, or I'd like to share this information with you. You know, maybe that kind of, if we want to call it abject humility, that might really win him over. It might avoid him being irked by you telling him something if he thinks he's a better Christian than you do. But ultimately, though, I don't think, John, that you would be offending in the way that Jesus was describing about take the log out of your own eye before you seek to take the splinter out of your brother's eye, because, you know, your brother objectively is in a bad situation, and so you're trying to do something good. And if you do it humbly, or if you do it indirectly, like through somebody else, I think you can really maybe accomplish some good for him. But I don't think that you would not be a hypocrite in my eyes, John. You would not be doing something that was what Jesus was referring to in that passage if you humbly tried to help your brother with that info.
Okay.
Yeah. Family situations can be the trickiest, can't they?
Yeah. I was kind of considered the black sheep of the family, but...
Are you back home now, John? Are you back to the sacraments? Are you back on track?
Yeah, I've stayed with the church my whole life, but not morally.
Well, what I mean is, are you back? And you don't owe me an answer. I'm just curious. Are you back now? Did you get that squared away with confession and you're back on track?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's the main thing.
I try to go to church mass daily and stuff. So, yeah. Pray my rosary.
That's all good.
Yeah.
Well, keep doing that for sure, John. And thank you for listening. Keep listening to Relevant Radio. We're here to try to help you and help fortify the good things you're already doing. So think about that. Those are two bits of advice that might work. You could try either one. And, you know, a third option that comes to mind is you could always find articles, like I've mentioned three times now, that website, canonlawmadeeasy.com. It's written by a canon lawyer. And if you browse through there, you might find an article that kind of describes the situation that your brother is in. And then maybe just send him a link. You know, no heat, no judgment. I'm just sending you this link. I thought you might find it interesting, and leave it at that. And maybe he'll read it. So give that a try, John. And thank you for the call. I appreciate it. How about Joe now in Minnesota? Good morning, Joe.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling about a nephew of mine. Just was announcing that he's getting married and they're looking for venues and, I think they're going to get married in about a year. And I just found out. And was raised Catholic, went to 12 years Catholic school. I don't think he's practicing anymore, really.
Okay.
And didn't seem to be something that, you know, he's, as far as I know, he's not even looking at a Catholic church. I'm not sure. So I was wondering if there's something that you know of, either a link or a book or an article that would help him to understand, you know, the beauty of the Catholic faith, and, you know, if that, why it would, he should consider getting married in a church. The girl he's marrying, I don't think she's Catholic, but I don't think she's ever been divorced either. Neither of them have ever been married, but
okay,
I just wanted to send him something now, if I'm going to send him something at all, rather than at, you know, after they have everything figured out.
Yeah, that's smart. Well, if you want to seek after his understanding of the church and why he should return to a practice of his faith because he loves Jesus, I wrote a book on that very topic. It's called Why Be Catholic? 10 Answers to a Very Important Question. And so perhaps that book would be useful to him. It's in that book I make the case for why people just like him should return to the practice of their faith because they love Jesus. Now, the second book, if there's a bit of theological work that needs to be done, if he maybe has drifted toward Protestantism, or if she herself is Protestant, a book that I also was involved with, I edited this book, it's called Surprised by Truth, and it's got 11 testimonies of former Protestants who became Catholic. And it's really exhilarating. It's a fascinating book. And the stories are riveting. And it's just one of those collections of testimonies that people really resonate with. And maybe give that book if you think that there's some theological or biblical repair work that needs to be done. Though either of those two, I mean, I'm deeply familiar with them because I was involved with them, but those are two that you could start with.
That's really good. I think I actually might have both of those books. So
perfect.
Good. And another thing is, though, to kind of get to the point of marriage and why it's important to be married in a Catholic church, I don't think he's rejected his faith or anything, but I don't think either one of them are really practicing any Protestant faith either.
Right.
So just something that would help them, you know, realize the beauty of Christianity and getting married in the church, that would kind of, if I gave him those two books, I don't know that he would associate it mm-hmm. right away with his marriage planning.
Yeah, so maybe that book I mentioned earlier would be just the thing. It's called Annulments in the Catholic Church, Straight Answers to Tough Questions. Now, obviously, he's not getting an annulment. He's getting married. But this book gets into what constitutes a valid marriage for him as a Catholic.
Is it real so, complicated? Because, you know, no, I want something not. Simple and fairly straightforward. You were getting into some of those canonical rules, and I thought, wow, this is really
I wouldn't give him that book. Yeah, that book, that's the Handbook of Moral Theology by Father Prummer. That would not be something I would give him because he'd fall asleep immediately. He'd be in a coma inside of 30 seconds. So that's for people like me who just dig that kind of stuff, but not for people who are not into it. So give that a try. There's always Archbishop Fulton Sheen's wonderful book. It's called Three to Get Married, and that's a very engaging book. And, I mean, Archbishop Sheen was such a great communicator. And then lastly, you might get the two of them, the ABCs of Finding a Good Husband and the ABCs of Finding a Good Wife, two different books written by the same author, Steve Wood. And it, even though they're getting married and they found each other, this book will help inform kind of their process about getting married and getting married in the church. I think that both of them would benefit from that book.
Okay, what was the name of that Archbishop Sheen book again?
It's called Three to Get Married. Three to Get Married. The third person, of course, is the Lord. Husband, wife, and the Lord right there in the middle. I've got to run, Joe. Got to take a break, but I hope that's helpful to you. Boy, there's like four or five books there to choose from, and I'm hopeful that one of them will do the trick. Thank you. We're going to take a break, and I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show in just a moment. First, though, I'd like to say thank you yet again for all of you who participated in our pledge drive last week. We are deeply grateful. I don't know how else to say it. Really, really grateful to you for participating. We had a goal of $3 million, and we exceeded that by your generosity, $3.2 million. Now, if you weren't able to participate, we're holding the door open for you. You can jump over to relevantradio.com and make your pledge. We'll count it for the pledge drive, but only for another day or so. You can also use the Relevant Radio app. Thanks again. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Good stuff from Duran Duran. I like the vibe. Somebody pointed out on Twitter, I want to share this with you. This is, I didn't see it on the Matt Walsh blog, but I think it derives from Matt Walsh blog. So it's at Matt Walsh blog. If someone interrupts Mass, the same act that makes abortion clinics legally immune also means that those interrupting church services can also be sued. Turnabout is fair play, in other words. The comment is, hilariously enough, if someone interrupts a worship service, the same act that makes abortion clinics legally immune also means that those who interrupt the church services can be sued by every member of the congregation. So here's a snippet. This is from the United States Department of Justice under the heading Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances and Places of Religious Worship. The special litigation section also enforces civil provisions of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act of 1994. This act prohibits the use or threat of force and physical obstruction that injures, intimidates, or interferes with a person seeking to obtain or provide reproductive health services or to exercise the First Amendment right of religious freedom at a place of religious worship. It also prohibits intentional property damage of a facility providing reproductive health services or at a place of religious worship. The act authorizes the Attorney General to seek injunctive relief, statutory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It gets into all the legalese. But isn't it odd and ironic that the very law that was enacted to protect abortion clinics from people who might, you know, disrupt it. I mean, there's a law that says you can't do that. And if you do, you're going to get arrested, probably go to jail. The same law says if you do the same thing at a Catholic church, as an example, the same law applies to you. So I like this. It is weird that the two are stuck together in the same law, but okay, whatever. So in these situations where you've got these wacko fascist leftists who are invading Catholic churches like they did at the Cathedral of Our Lady of the Angels in Los Angeles on Sunday and many other churches, Old St. Patrick's Basilica in New York City and many others, where the masses were disrupted by these ridiculous people shouting their slogans and dressed up like the Handmaid's Tale thing. They are subject to, you know, criminal penalties under the same act as if a pro-life person had done something disruptive at an abortion clinic. I just think it's interesting. Turnabout is fair play, in other words. And lastly, for your good-to-know file, I don't know if the name Patrice Cullors means anything. If you've been listening to this program, you might have heard us mention her name. She's one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter. And this, according to the New York Post, she has admitted to throwing parties at her organization's swanky $6 million Los Angeles mansion, despite previously saying that she had never used the property for personal gain. She's 38 years old. She told the Associated Press yesterday that she hosted her son's birthday party and a gathering to celebrate President Biden's inauguration at the property early last year. Black Lives Matter has faced a torrent of criticism and backlash last month when it publicly emerged that the organization had secretly purchased the LA mansion, which boasts a home with six bedrooms and bathrooms, a swimming pool, a soundstage, and office space. And this was purchased back in 2020. At the time, Cullors said the property was purchased by Black Lives Matter to serve as a meeting venue and campus. She also issued a statement denying suggestions that she lived at the property or had taken advantage of it for personal gain. But Cullors, who resigned as Black Lives Matter's executive director a year ago after spending 6 years at the helm, said she used the property twice at least for events that weren't business related. And it goes on in detail after that. So if you're interested, we'll have the article posted for you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Dawn now in Rhode Island. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Patrick. I want to say thank you for your show. It's been a very heartwarming experience for me within the past 6 months to a year. I want to say that I have been a Catholic my whole life, but I've just recently made a strong comeback, and I attend Mass daily.
That's good.
I wish that I did this while I was working, because it's only a 20-minute Mass, and it just sets the day right. And I can't stress that enough to people. But anyway, my question is, and I'm a lector as well, and I've been enjoying it. And people are, you know, thanking me for my voice as a lector in the church. Enjoying it. So, but my question is, my family has been in sort of a crisis for the past 5 years. My son has been diagnosed with a very serious mental illness. And he goes for his medical exams, and he goes for his, the, you know, what he needs, his shot. And But the problem is he's not in therapy. He doesn't follow through with the whole program.
How old is he?
He's 27. Okay. He was living at home after college. He graduated, and then he had a break, a psychotic break, and he came back home, and it's been chaos ever since. And so now it's, you know, leading up to the point where he actually, we didn't think this would come, but it did. He actually, you know, hit my husband because he wanted money. Mm-hmm. And again, he only wants money for all the vices in life, for gambling and doing a thousand things that are wrong. And I know I've read the parable about the prodigal son and all of that. But my question to you is, how much mercy am I supposed to have? We told him that was it. You have to leave now. And he's out of the house. And he found some people to live with. I don't know whether these are people are good people or bad people yet. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure. But we help him out with food. We help him out with clothing. We've helped him out with money. How much mercy? Because I know God wants us in divine mercy to have mercy. And especially for my own son.
Yeah.
I want him to have the help that he needs and get the help. But he does his own thing. He listens and does what he wants. He goes, you know, he does everything bad. Any vice you can think of, he's into it. He listens to this music that's totally violent. And he listens to it every day. Mm-hmm. And I know there's Padre Pio, that saint who would, you know, Padre Pio would fight the devil.
I
need to know for my soul as a mother, how much mercy do I have? Is my husband, I just don't want my husband to take him back. And I have a feeling that my husband wants to take him back.
Yeah. I think I have a few thoughts that maybe worth considering here. Okay. Number one, it has escalated to the point now where you and your husband are physically in danger. And if he's already at the point now where he's striking your husband, it probably is a matter of time before he does the same thing to you. And I'm not an expert in such things, but my impression is that when that kind of syndrome starts, it usually escalates to more and more violence. So you have every right. In fact, I would say you have a duty to each other. Your husband has a duty to protect you, and you have a duty to protect him as best you can. So it's only appropriate that you say to your son, you can't live here anymore. So I want to affirm that decision. It seems to me that's really the only decision you can make under the circumstances. Now, how much mercy do you have to show? I don't know if I can answer the question if it's put that way. I would say show mercy at every step, but don't confuse mercy with indulgence. And that might be where the problem is. If you're indulging him and enabling him, that's not mercy. That's, you know, whatever it is, it's not, strictly speaking, mercy. Mercy is, in this context, you're continuing to love your son. I think it's really good the way you're helping him with non-financial ways of helping him. So food, clothing, those are good things because he can't spend that. He can't go buy drugs with it, or he can't go, you know, whatever. He can't parlay that into these vices. So I would continue doing that if you possibly can. I would not give him money. I would not allow him to move back in with you. It's just too dangerous, too disruptive, and it's too unpredictable. I would not give him money. If you have a parish that uses scrip, for example, where you can give somebody what amounts to like a coupon, and they can go and redeem that for things that they need, clothing or other things, that's another possibility. If it's as bad as it sounds like it is, you know, maybe you need to have healthcare professionals intervene and maybe institutionalize him for a time so he can have a psych evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can determine, is he a danger to himself and to others? And if so, maybe he needs to spend some time in an institution where they can give him the help he needs. Medication, counseling, etc. I don't know. I mean, that's an area that's beyond my expertise. So I'm only guessing about that. But I do know that, I mean, there is a time when law enforcement would get involved and say, this guy has to go in and be evaluated. And maybe you've reached that point, you know?
Yes.
But you as a mom, I know it breaks your heart because you love your son and you want him to be happy. But if he refuses to do the things that will make him truly happy, and he insists upon doing the things that are not only going to make him unhappy, but also make the two of you miserable and live in fear, you're not obligated to put up with that. And it doesn't mean you're not being merciful. It means you're being prudent under the circumstances, I think.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much.
There's a book that you might enjoy reading. Actually, a couple of books. I've recommended them before. One is called Boundaries, When to Say Yes, How to Say No. And the book is written by a couple guys, Henry Cloud and John Townsend. And I have found some success in recommending that book to others. I'm familiar with the book, and I think it's helpful. So it gives you strategies and techniques for how you can do this. Boundaries is the name of the book. Second book is a kind of a classic in the field. And this is written by a child psychologist, Dr. James Dobson. He's a Protestant, but he's primarily dealing with younger children. But one of the classics that he wrote is called The Strong-Willed Child. And if you read that book, even though it may not apply to your son because he's 10, 12, 15 years older than maybe the child that he envisions when he wrote this book, I think many of the principles would still apply. So The Strong-Willed Child by James Dobson. And then another book that he wrote, I think even before that, is called Dare to Discipline. And this, too, was a way for him to impart kind of Christian principles combined with the valid psychological insights that science brings to it, and show how parents don't have to lose control, and how you can maintain control and still be loving and yet still discipline an unruly child. So try those as well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Don. I hope things get sorted out. I hope they get smoother. I really do.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Yeah, terrible when these things happen. But, you know, life is weird and things happen that you're not anticipating. So get help. This is for anyone out there. If you're in a situation where there's somebody who is acting, who is dangerous, who's employing physical violence or doing things that are illegal, I mean, don't just sit and take it. Don't just grin and bear it. You're not a bad parent if you love your son or your daughter enough to intervene. And sometimes if it's law enforcement that needs to intervene, that may very well be the very best thing, to break the cycle, to disrupt the syndrome so it doesn't get worse. And often it does. So I can only imagine how heartbreaking it would be for any parent to watch and see this happen. But at the same time, you know, don't be afraid to take a step that might seem drastic, because maybe that's exactly what's necessary under the circumstances. Let's go now to Bob in Maryland. Good morning, Bob. Welcome.
Yes. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Right now, I'll give you a comment on the last person you were speaking to. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, the books you mentioned are absolutely fantastic. I actually took a course with the Townsend.
It was on
disc at a church. And I think most churches should have this, because so many people are concerned with not only the difference between, I'll get back to what I call for.
Okay.
The term Monsignor, all of a sudden it hit me, bothered me, something awful. The term in French is my lord.
Right.
How can we call the priest my lord?
Well, I hear your question, Bob. It's simply an artifact of archaic English. Now, obviously, it's the same thing in French. So the thing to remember is that back in the olden days, now this goes back into the medieval times, where it was just a common title that you would give to somebody who was of a higher station than you, my lord. You would not intend in any way by saying that to be addressing the person as if he were Jesus, as if he were God. It doesn't have those connotations. It doesn't mean what we think of if you say the Lord or my Lord, like St. Thomas did, my Lord and my God. He was speaking to Jesus. He was worshiping Jesus. It doesn't mean that. It has an entirely different meaning, And it's just simply a generic title of respect that was typically used for somebody of a higher social station than you. And that's all it is. Very benign. It doesn't connote anything about Jesus as Lord in any way.
Yeah, I realize that that has to be, but it's something I don't think should happen. I mean, since the connotation is there. Yeah, okay.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, though, Bob. Just with all respect, my point is the connotation is not there. There is no connotation, properly understood, of Lord in the sense of Jesus. It's in the other way. It's the generic sense.
Yeah. Well, personally, I don't think it should happen, but I'll let that go. What I was trying to say later is the difference between helping and enabling, a tremendous difference. And I think you explained a little bit of that. But like I said, I'm so familiar with this. I know so many people that need that training. It's just unbelievable. Oh, another thing I have, with all the training I've had, like Christianity, I had the nuns from France, which was top education, let me tell you. Free. Anyway, she used to talk a lot about indulgences.
Okay.
And it used to bother me a little bit then. And now I'm thinking, oh, my God. We have modified it quite a bit, thank God.
I think I can jump in and answer your question on this, Bob. So indulgences used to be widely misunderstood by a lot of Catholics because prior to the revision of the church's way of offering them, you could see like a holy card that said 300 days indulgence or 1 year indulgence or 7 years indulgence. And most Catholics assumed wrongly that that meant that the church was saying you're going to get 300 days off purgatory. And that's not what it meant. What it meant was that this would be the church remitting 300 days worth of penance that you might do in this life. It wasn't saying anything about purgatory directly at all. But that was very misunderstood. So in the revision that was promulgated under Pope Paul VI, it was just simply streamlined to be there's a partial indulgence with no specified amount and a plenary indulgence, which is a complete remission of all the effects due to sin and all the need to do penance for sin that is forgiven. So it's much easier to understand now. It's much more streamlined, and I'm glad for it. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it very much. We're going to take a quick time out, and then we're going to come right back to the phone. So those of you who are holding, please stand by. I'll be coming to you right after this. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com. All right, I love the Duran Duran vibe today. Thank you, Thomas. 888-914-9149. Let us go to Lisa in Palm City, Florida. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you today?
Doing well, thank you.
I'm calling you where there's tremendous joy in my heart.
Well, that's
I spoke
good.
To you a couple weeks ago on my road.
Not everybody who calls me, Lisa, has tremendous joy in their heart, but I'm glad you do.
I do, and for a lot of reasons, but for this I wanted to let you know that I called you on the road up to see my sister in DeLand, Florida. Her name was Florence, and she was given the bad news of that there was nothing more to do with her blood cancer, leukemia, and another cancer. I can't remember the name of it, but it was not looking good and was told to go home and prepare.
Yeah.
So she's had some blood workings done on her blood draws to assess things and get some transfusions of blood to help her body. And the doctor oncologist just, he reviewed it himself personally as well as other people, and they found that her blood was considered normal.
Oh.
Now, that doesn't mean the cancer's gone, but it means that whatever blood she was given is working now, that maybe the chemotherapy she was given took a little longer to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. All I just want to say was a miracle, and we're, the whole family and everyone that loves her and knows her is just so full of joy.
I can imagine. How beautiful. How beautiful,
and so
Lisa.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm still working on getting her to maybe become a Catholic and understand what that means for her. But I just wanted to give you some good news, because there's so many times in this world we're just given such bad news all the time, and there are miracles. I mean, and I believe that there were and are, even if they didn't come to me or my personally, but this is definitely a miracle.
Beautiful. I love it, and I'm so happy for you and for her, Lisa. Praise God.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so grateful. Her son's getting married on May 20th up in Baltimore, and we're so looking forward to having her attend.
Well, we will celebrate in spirit for all the blessings that God is giving to you and your family, and to her most especially. Thank you for that. What an uplifting thing. Let's go to Tony now in Austin. Good morning, Tony.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. So I had a very similar question to the previous caller with her son. Okay. Except mine's a little bit different. My son is 20 years old, and he has a bit of a challenge of showing maturity. If I could give you a background story, I married his mom. He's my stepson.
Okay.
He's been through a lot of stuff growing up, especially some traumatic aspects with his dad. When he came to live with us, he kind of had this, well, I didn't have a childhood, so I'm trying to catch up on it. And we gave him a little bit of slack for that. But then he had moved out.
How does he want to catch up on it?
Went to go.
When he says, I'd never had a childhood, what is he doing that he thinks is catching him up on that?
Well, this was before. This is before he came to, move back in with us. He, about 13 or 14, he wanted to play video games. He wanted to go have fun, stay out with his friends, go do things like going out into the woods looking for snakes or bugs or whatever. And, when he moved out when he was 17. We didn't fight it because he and I were butting heads a lot to where I wanted to keep the peace because I do love him very much. But when he came back with issues, finding out that his ex-girlfriend potentially has his baby. And that's a little bit of a drama there. I don't want to bore you with, but...
she does? In other words, she's expecting right now, or is the baby born?
Yeah, she's expecting. She's actually due in June. Okay. When
is she not sure who the father is, or is she just being coy about it?
She's not sure about it. As a matter of fact, she had told him it may not be his; it could be her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would recommend just to intervene here. I would recommend that he find out and find out quickly. I'm sure that there are DNA tests that can be done, but he should find out. Maybe it would require the baby to be born. I don't know. But that's a huge question mark on his life right now. And it will affect the way in which he moves forward and what decisions he needs to make if he does, in fact, have a baby on the way. So that would be a high priority that I would try to impress upon him, would be to find out one way or the other. That way you know which path you're going to need to take.
He is, and he went to talk to the ex-girlfriend, and she told him, she basically blew him off twice and told him, look, me and my boyfriend have this, you don't have to worry about it. But I keep trying to tell him, look, you're going to have to find out for sure. And not only that, since you're not together with her, you're going to have to look for a job, and a sustainable job to get to pay child support. But it's like, when he looks at me, it's just this look like, shut up, leave me alone. I don't want to talk about it. And
all right, so he's 20 years old. He's acting, irresponsibly and in an immature manner. And so how would you, I realize what you're saying here. So how would you boil this down to a question? I presume you wanted to ask a question about what maybe you should do?
Yeah.
Okay.
The question was, is that I would like to know, since you're a dad of 11 kids, and I know you have sons and you probably have dealt with all different kinds, how would you deal with it that can probably help me kind of get him to understand better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have had to go through, not all of this that I ever have to go through, so I don't have an exact experience like this, but some of the elements that you just mentioned I've had to go through with some sons. So the one thing is, if he's 20 years old, he's certainly old enough to be out on his own. Is he living under your roof? Is he eating your food? Are you paying for his cell phone and car insurance and things like that?
Oh, yeah, his cell phone and just paying for his food.
Yeah. Well, I would cut the cell phone off right away, and I'd say I never would have paid for his cell phone in the first place, but it's after the fact. and you meant well, but I would say you're enabling him if you're paying for his cell phone bill. Let him pay for his cell phone bill. And if it means he's got to go get a second job to earn some extra money, then go get a job and earn extra money. The same is true. Now, if he's really in need to be able to stay with you, then okay, that, you know, these things happen, and I've been there myself. But if he's able-bodied and he has a decent job and he's making enough money where he can rent an apartment or room with somebody and move out on his own, it's good for him to move out and get going. It's not good for him to stay in the shelter of mom and dad's house unless there's some need for it. I mean, and there are times when there is a need for it, but assuming that there isn't, it's not good for him to just be coddled and catered to by you and your wife. He's a young man. He needs to get out there and make things happen. He needs to hustle and work and save and get a few dings and a few hard knocks and learn what it means to have to grow up and put food on the table and pay your own cell phone bill. So this is why I am four square against parents paying for their children's cell phone bills. Don't pay their car insurance. Don't pay their car payment. Don't do those things, because even though you can, let's say that you have the financial wherewithal to do it, it's not good for them. And it sets them up for irresponsible behavior rather later on. So all this to say, I would begin cutting those strings right now. And if it's possible, if he's living with you and you see that he could easily live on his own, start maneuvering him out the door. And it might take 6 months or it might take 3 months, but start getting him launched, because he needs to fly the coop, fly the nest. Another thought that comes to my mind, Tony, is that not for every young person, but for some young people, the military is a very good option for them. So if you were to talk to him about his career and his future, and he's aimless, as many 20-year-olds are, I was somewhat aimless at 20 years of age, and I got married at 20, and I still was aimless. I didn't know where I was going in my life. So if you were to maybe go with him to, you know, the U.S. Marine Corps recruiting station or the Navy or any of the branches, it really doesn't matter. And as his dad, go with him, sit down with the recruiter, talk it through. What are the options? What are the opportunities? How much will I get paid? And maybe if that appeals to him, what they will do is give him structure. They're going to give him all kinds of structure and all kinds of discipline. And he'll have to learn how to grow up. Now, that's not a cure-all. And it doesn't mean that if he goes into the Marine Corps, he's going to, you know, suddenly transform into this wonderful human being. That may or may not happen. But if he lacks structure and a goal and motivation and a work ethic and all of those things, that's something that the military, for some kids, they can provide that, and it can be a good outcome. So that's another thing you might want to look into. And he's at the right age to do
that.
Thank
you, Patrick. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Just continue to love him. I mean, I know you love your son. Love him. Show him you love him. Hug him. Kiss him. Tell him I love you. And let him know that you're his dad no matter what. You accept him. You love him no matter what. But that for his sake, he's got to become a man. And this is prime time for him right now. He's got to become a man. He can't be like a child. St. Paul says, when I was a child, I acted like a child. I thought like a child. I did things that children do. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. And that's from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And I would impress that upon him. You know, the time to be a child is over. Now it's time to be a man.
Okay. I'll do that. Thank you again. Thank you for the advice. That really does help.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome. Thank you, Tony. You know, and I appreciate the call. There's another book by my friend Steve Wood. And I just want to bring up, the main title of the book is called Legacy. And it is a really good book about raising sons. And let's see, where did it go? I know it's in here somewhere. Yeah, there we go. I think I can find it here. So Legacy is the name of the book. What's the subtitle? There it is. So A Father's Handbook for Raising Godly Children. And I wrote a blurb for the back cover. He's an expert in this area. So Legacy, very good book. Another one is Christian Fatherhood. Another one is, there's actually a study guide for that. But if you're interested, dads, if you're interested in some really good advice from a guy who's been there, he knows what he's talking about, these books by Steve Wood are really good. He's the same author, by the way, that wrote those other books that I recommend called The ABCs of Choosing a Good Husband. That's for the ladies. And The ABCs of Choosing a Good Wife. That's for the dudes. And you can check it all out at your local Catholic bookstore. Go to them first if you have one nearby. If not, his website is dads.org, plural, dads.org. Now, I'd benefit in no way whatsoever from this. He doesn't even know that I'm mentioning his books. So it's not like there's any, you know, benefit to me. But having been a dad and raised boys, and I understand, I understand. I think you'll find these books helpful. All right. I don't think I can take another call yet, only because we've got a break coming. But don't worry, if you're holding on the phones, I'm coming back to you on the other side of this quick timeout. In the meantime, I just want to say one more time, thank you from all of us here at Relevant Radio. How grateful we are to you. I can't express it in words, but $3.2 million came in for our pledge drive goal of $3 million, and that's because of your generosity. So from all of us here at Relevant Radio, thank you. We're deeply grateful, and we're praying for you, asking God to bless you for your generosity. Now, as it happens, sometimes you can't participate in the moment because you have other things going on. That's okay. I'm told that we're holding the door open for another day or so. So if you want to be counted for this pledge drive, you can still make your pledge safe and secure at relevantradio.com, or you can use the Relevant Radio app. Either way, it's available for you, and we'll count that for you for the pledge drive. When we return, I'm going to go right to your phone calls. My number is 888-914-9149. I do have one or two lines open, but they won't last too long. So zoom in and grab it by calling 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.